friends, welcome back to another edition of the Avery May Show. I just love spending this time with you each and every time you tune in. Today I am joined by Power Girl. She's a friend of mine, and she's sharing her heartbreaking story of what she's gone through working for PG&E, a job she absolutely loved. She was really good at it, but then, you know, there's some abuse that happens sometimes on the workforce. And if you've ever experienced a hardship at the workforce, then you're going to be able to understand what she's going through. So she's going to explain her journey of what happened when she was just trying to tell the people at PG&E, hey, there's some safety issues and we need to take care of it. This is on the show. You're going to hear about what happened to her and the PTSD that came from just trying to make her place a safer environment to work at, because safety was important. That's coming up on the show today. Make sure you like, share, and subscribe. Please share this far and wide. Join me on Telegram. I always add more content there. Please join me at The Amber May Show. You can find me at True Social Amber May, Frank Social Amber May. You can find me on Clout Hub. And I'd really love to carry more of the conversation there. If you believe in what I'm doing, please consider becoming an angel investor. The easiest way to do that is going to the website at theambermayshow.com. Click the donate button and donate whatever you think you could donate to the show. You can also become a $5 monthly subscriber by visiting theambermayshow.locals.com. I appreciate your support. It means the world to me. Hey, right now I have Power Girl joining me, so stay tuned. That you are here because my gal pal Power Girl is joining us today. Welcome, Power Girl, to the program. I'm so glad to have you.
Thank you. Thank you, Amber. I really appreciate being here. I really appreciate everything that you're doing. You have such an incredible cachet of hard-hitting interviews, and I just feel incredibly honored to be a part of it. Thank you for having me.
Yes, this is going to be exciting because people know PG&E from the movie Erin Brockovich, and you worked for the company, and there's so much that you're going to uncover and share with us today. So I don't know, where should we start? Where do you want to start with your story?
Well, I mean, you know, that is always the question. This is a huge elephant, and there's several reasons why I'm speaking up in this way. So that's probably the best place to start, really, is at the beginning. I'll just tell you briefly a little bit of my background. That's how we qualify in my field of expertise, which is, on one hand, information technology and transfer specifically, and on the other hand is natural gas, specifically emergency response. So that's my background. That's my professional background. But before that, I was a California native, born in San Francisco, raised in the Bay Area, mostly on the East Bay, single mom, came from, you know, a complicated background, but didn't stop me from being a very successful tradeswoman. I began my utility trade pursuit in early 2001, when 9/11 happened. Wow. As a mother of two with no, you know, a parental or, you know, paternal support, I was looking for something. As I put it, I was looking for a man's wallet. I needed to pay Bay Area rents and pay for daycare. And I needed, you know, a man's job. And I have the frame to do that work. I have the mind to do that work. And frankly, I was going crazy in the office. I worked in inside sales and plumbing for several years and just was going nuts in the office. So I called up my buddy and I said, dude, get me out of this office. I'm one of those people that can't sit still. Mm-hmm. And he said, can you climb poles? And I said, I will do anything. I will do anything.
Did you clarify that for a second? Because that could be taken in a whole different way.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. Yes, utility poles. So I called up my buddy. That's a very good point. Thank you.
Midnight on the poles.
I know, right. So yes, exactly. And you know, again, utility workers. So my mind goes right there. So you're in my wheelhouse now. But no, seriously. So I called up my buddy from literally from childhood who worked for cable. At the time it was AT&T broadband, and later on became Comcast. And so that's what I meant. Utility poles. I he said, can you climb utility? Are you willing to climb utility poles? Cause that was what his group did. He's a supervisor for the cable company. And one of my, you know, best friends growing up. And yeah, I was willing to do that because I just had to get outside of the office. It's not my environment. It's not my cup of tea. And I found that I madly fell in love with the utility business, working on my own in my own truck and my own terms. And so did that for 20 years. And it was a lot of fun. I did it in San Francisco. So I got to see I got to get a very intimate awareness of San Francisco before it turned into what it is today.
Wow.
And it was, I can tell you that it was an absolutely beautiful city. But yeah, so San Francisco is very dear to me. I went there for many years to visit family. It was just over the bay. For those of us who are from San Francisco, especially those of us who were born and are native to San Francisco specifically, and I would say even the peninsula where I did utility work, there is such a magic about it. It has, it's a small town compared to New York. Within the last few years have been to New York, and New York is gorgeous. New York is something else. Not anymore. But when I went to New York, again, just caught it right before it went downhill. And these two cities are completely different, but they both have the same amount of magic, but totally different. Mm-hmm. San Francisco has more of a towny feel. Maybe the boroughs feel that way in New York, but in San Francisco, what I notice about the utility workers, and look, if you want to know a city or an area, the utility workers are the best people to ask. Those utility workers, they know the best places to eat. They know where all the best neighborhoods are. This is the heart and blood, of not just your immediate area, but the country are the utility workers. And that's the biggest reason why I'm doing what I'm doing, because they, until Power Girl came along, didn't have much of an outside voice. Yeah, it was a beautiful area. I never in a million years thought I would leave it. And what's happened to it is absolutely a crying shame, and the biggest reason why I'm standing up.
Is it true that there's like people defecate all over the streets? Like they go to the bathroom right on the streets and stuff. Is that true?
Well, apparently the UN wants to make, that's a whole nother subject, but yes, that is absolutely true. And ironically, and I was just telling Gary, my better half, that ironically it's the high rent district. I mean, these people are paying like a phenomenal amounts of money to live in these areas, and now they're riddled. So I don't even know how this is going to work out. That's why I always have a great giggle when I see Gavin groveling in Florida, because I just don't see it. I just don't see it. I don't see how he can even have aspirations.
See, when I was in San Diego last summer, I noticed a big difference this last summer versus times in the past. Homelessness went up tremendously. It was like filthy, more garbage. It just looked run down. That whole Southern Cal.
And San Diego is such a cool area.
And it is a cool area. Arizona people love San Diego. We like to go and escape and have that ocean just like a few hours away with the 70 degree temperature. But I went this last time and I'm just like, wow, it's gone downhill since I've been here a couple years prior. It just broke my heart.
It's a crying shame.
Yeah,
it is. And California, as a California girl, I mean, look, when I was a utility worker, I worked all over the Bay Area, down in the South Bay, East Bay, West Bay, even the North Bay, as an instructor, I worked all the way up from Eureka to Bakersfield and back again. So I have, you know, I am somebody who knows this territory very, very well. I was also, again, a kid that had a hard time sitting still. So as soon as I could drive all over the, we used to go to Santa Cruz. We went to San Francisco. I mean, I had some of the greatest memories and as a teenager, you know, in the heavy metal scene in the Bay Area. I mean, it was just growing up as a California girl used to be something you were proud of. And it used to be something that, you know, it was almost like you were a step ahead above or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not that way anymore. We've become a laughing stock and it's frightening. So, you know, that's one of the biggest reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I do have a very unique perspective. I do have the training to do it. That's the biggest reason. And, you know, basically, I am, as I said in the beginning, cancel California cancel culture at the behest of my employer, who is still currently my employer, is trying to erase Christina Gerst. And that is not something that I'm going to allow because,
so let's,
you know,
dive into that. So you're working at you're working doing cables for the,
right,
the cable company. And then somehow you got transitioned into working for PG&E.
Into PG&E. Yeah. So that's a great question. So it just so happened that, you know, cable wasn't paying enough money for me to be able to survive on a single income in the Bay Area. So I was constantly looking for something, like I said, that was, you know, more fortifying, something that, you know, can create a step up. I knew that I had the talent. I knew I had the gumption and the work ethic to do, you know, something. And so we happened to be heading up to Santa Rosa. That was one of our favorite memories, actually. I still talk to one of my old buddies, and we love that trip. But we were heading up to Santa Rosa. Somebody said, hey, did you know PG&E was hiring meter readers? And I was like, hey, that's an idea. You know, again, growing up in California, PG&E had always had a reputation. I always kind of saw them as a king of California. You know, I'll never forget
even
the time
after the whole movie thing with Julia Roberts. Even after that, they saw.
Oh, yeah. Reputation. Yeah. I mean, you know, again, you have to remember that, you know, the movies are one thing, but then, you know, living in it is another thing. And the thing that this is, again, one of the things I'm so glad I love your interviewing, because this really pinpoints something that's very important. You know, utility workers, we are a different breed, because we're the kind of people that you don't think about until something is wrong.
Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break. In the early 1900s, like 1920s, 30s, with $20, you used to be able to buy an entire men's suit. You could get the handkerchief, the tie, the vest, the jacket, the pants, the belt, everything. And you could also buy that with a piece of gold. Now, in today's standards, you can't buy much with $20, maybe a tie, maybe that's it. You could not even come close to an entire men's suit with a $20 bill. However, if you still had a piece of gold, you could still buy an entire men's suit with that piece of gold. See, silver and gold have intrinsic value, and it's had intrinsic value since the beginning of time. It's always been a currency around since the existence of man, gold and silver. So why not protect your investments and protect your earning power by owning some gold and silver? And the easiest way to do that is contacting Jim Tewell at EPSWealthManagement.com. That's Edward Paul Sam, WealthManagement.com, EPSWealthManagement.com. Give him a call and let him know you'd like some, to have some tangible assets in your portfolio. You'd like to have some gold and silver, and he can help you do that. So if you're ready to protect yourself and protect your investments, then go ahead and give Jim Tewell a call, whom you've seen on our program at EPSWealthManagement.com. Let him know Amber May sent you.
Hey guys, this is Pastor Greg Locke, and you are listening to The Amber May Show.
These days, it's hard finding doctors you can trust, but look no further, because now you can go to Dr. Meehan at MeehanMD.com for all your future healthcare needs. And while you're there, you might want to check out his supplements. He has some amazing supplements. For instance, the Optimal Defense, that is perfect for the cold and flu time of year. That helps support your immune system. And if you have like reoccurring issues that come up with your health, that might be a great supplement for you to try. You may also want to check out Immune Plus. It has herbs like echinacea and elderberry. And Immune Plus also contains medicinal mushrooms to help support the body's natural defenses. So if you're looking for a doctor you can trust, set up a telemed appointment with Dr. Meehan at meehanmd.com. Use promo code AMBER while you're there. Again, Meehan is spelled MEEHANMD.com for all your telemed and supplemental needs. And remember, use promo code AMBER at checkout. You are listening to The Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
And, you know, there are actually some of the hardest working people. And so in reality, like on TV, maybe on the screen, but in they're the bad guy. But in reality, for a lot of neighborhoods that have been in a outage situation or in a natural disaster situation, you know, PG&E comes in and really gets the job done. So that is the reputation that we had as a company before things really started to go downhill. Okay. So, and I would pinpoint that moment as being the San Bruno explosion. And I don't,
from those of us not in that area, we don't really know what that means.
So basically what happened was in September of 2010, up on the hill in San Bruno, California, which just so happened to be well-established police and fire neighborhood, there was a transmission line that exploded. So, and again, we're going to get through the symptoms. We can do this. So the reason why you might notice my body is reacting to this is because I was a first responder in the area for that event. So wow. I was not there the night that happened. I had actually just taken a day shift. So I would have been there the night that it happened, but I was now working a day shift just a couple months before I had taken a day shift. But that was my territory. And at the time I was a safety chair for that whole area. So that would be the whole San Francisco Peninsula, 3 yards included. I was the safety chair. So it really hit home for me because I was there in Ground Zero. I wasn't there the night of the event. I'm sure that would have been way more than I could have taken because the following 10 days were made a big enough impact, you know, no pun intended. But I was there the very next day, shuttling, you know, because you needed a truck to get into that area after the event. Shuttling.
So did it cause like major fires?
It was pretty big. And it what it did was it basically rocked that Northern California area in relation to natural gas. It started a chain reaction of reaction, is the best way to put it. So because it was such a big thing for the area, and at the time it was being reported on a national and world level because it was a big event, but people have since forgotten about it. And now, of course, because of the California fires, it's been completely forgotten about, which is unfortunate because there were a lot of important lessons that came from that situation that I'm, again, intimately familiar with because I was an instructor who used to teach classes that spoke to the lessons that were learned from that event. So not only was I a first responder for the event and there for the 10-day restoration afterwards, which means to the layman, I was in that neighborhood servicing those people that were dealing with those tragedies.
So did
and the reactions that came with that.
Then did people die from that explosion?
Yeah, about 11 people died.
Wow.
Including a beautiful 20-year-old woman, and there was an advocate for the CPUC that died, her and her daughter, who I believe was about 9 years old. There was an older woman. There were quite a few deaths, and it was pretty horrific, and it really rattled the neighborhood for sure. And then, of course, the ripple effect of the, at least I would say, the Bay Area, Northern California area in relation to natural gas. What happened, what I saw in the field as a first responder Who, again, when I say first responder, what I mean is that in the event of a gas emergency, if you come home and your house smells like natural gas, or if your carbon monoxide detector is going off, or even in a structure fire, they're going to refer to the energy company to de-energize. You know, and in the case of a gas emergency, there are other procedures. So, you know, so we're just the ones that work with fire and police, to, you know, make the situation safe, or in the case of a gas or electric emergency, we would be the incident commander. If it's an energy, what I call an energy emergency. Okay. So that's who, that was the capacity that I did in the Bay Area after this explosion. And that really shaped my training. It really shaped my perspective. I'm still in the grip of cancel culture. I'm still dealing with their attempt to erase me. And because I'm so insistent that they're not going to, it's wreaking havoc on my body. And I really don't have a choice because we're talking about my livelihood here. So, you know, it's God has put me, the way I look at it is God has put me in a very, very unique perspective, in a very unique position, you know, and I'm just trying to fulfill what he wants me to do, because I do believe that he's poured, I know that he's poured a lot of resources into the making of Power Girl, and it's my responsibility. And this is something that I spoke to my guys after San Bruno, because I was the safety chair at the time and I was the one tasked to speak to it. And it was a huge responsibility for me. And because I do take safety very seriously, that what we used to say in the field, what makes safety important, is that, you know, the techs that come and the guys that are out in PG&E climbing those poles in the middle of the winter, that is real hard work that most people cannot do. And those men don't always come home to their families because it is so dangerous. And so, you know, safety, which is something, it really feels to me like in California and specifically in PG&E, we have traded an elite safety culture for a song and dance routine. And it's the saddest thing I've ever seen. So
after the fire, the explosion that happened, and you guys learned a whole new way of doing things, and you had to redo your safety training, and you were teaching the new things you've learned as a result of that explosion, what happened next?
Well, basically, you're hitting on a really great point. You know, the thing that changed, and this is really the point behind why I'm speaking up, the thing that changed mostly was that's really when the abuse, they turned it up to 11, and it became high, you know, very focused on command and control. And it was this strange mixture of, which very unfortunate mixture actually, of the turning up the command and control to 11, and then also hiring management who do not have a traditional understanding in the job that they are supervising. So in other words, you know, there were gentlemen who were just not, they didn't have the trades understanding of the job that we did, which is a huge scope of responsibility. And, it, you know, it created a clouded lens for them. They weren't able to make accurate decisions. So it was just this really weird combination of, we're going to put our boot on your neck and you're going to do what we say, but we don't really know what you're supposed to be doing. You know what I mean? So it didn't work. I'm sorry, for California first responders, the new normal started with the first California wildfire. And this new normal, they've broken the rules so hard that we can now change it to what we want it to be. To me, it's a blank slate. It's an opportunity. And I look at it that way because I'm in California and we're behind enemy lines. Like we are a cautionary tale, you know, and I don't know what it's like in Arizona, Amber, but here in California, it's frightening. And
also, describe it for us so we understand.
It's just gotten so dark. You see it on the news and you see it everywhere in social media. You know, there's You've got the Drag Queen Story Hour, which started out innocently enough, but we can see here in Eureka that it's just, it's something completely so much more grotesque than that. You know, there's I mean, my story is a perfect example. I went from being someone who was performing at the top of their pay band, who was, you know, a tradeswoman of renown, to being just erased. I mean, literally one day I was there and the next minute I wasn't there, and they're trying to make it like it was no big deal.
Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and my employees and I want to thank you for your continued support by bringing you the biggest bath sale ever. Get my six-piece towel sets for the lowest price ever, only $39.96. His and her bathrobes, 50% off. Bath mats for as low as $17.49. And I'm also excited to announce the original My Slippers are back in stock. And now they come in even more colors and wide sizes. They're made with the same great patented technology. And yes, you'll still save $90 a pair. So get the biggest savings ever on bath sheets, bath mats, washcloths, hand towels, bathrobes, slippers, and so much more. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code and get deep discounts on all MyPillow bath products, including our six-piece towel sets. Regular $89.98, now only $39.96. Get all your shopping in while quantities last, so please order now.
I'm Clay Clark. I'm a very pale male, and you're listening to The Amber May Show. Hey!
What if I told you that there was a beauty product that also helped block fat? Would you be interested? I know you would, because it's something I'm interested in. The older I got, the more wrinkles that are showing up on the forehead, under the eyes. I got this Timeless box. It's amazing because the oil goes on after I clean up my face. The oil goes on and it helps with wrinkles. It helps with any kind of skin issues you might have. It's great for deterring insect bites. You gotta try it. It's amazing with that. And it's super easy. You just put it on your face and it just helps with any kind of skin issues you might have. Not only does the oil do that, but it also blocks fat. So put a dropper in your mouth right before you have a meal, and you could be stopping fat right before the get-go. So if you want to lose weight and you want to have a beautiful looking face, or if you have skin, anything a skin that you're just like, I don't like this, then get the Timeless Pack at thetimelesspack.com. Use my name, Amber May. Use promo code Amber May and save almost half off on the Timeless Pack. So that's thetimelesspack.com. Promo code Amber May and save some money for getting your wrinkles and fat loss. You are listening to The Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
You know, cancel culture, as Stephen, I wish I could say his name correctly, but Stephen Molyneux, I don't know how to say his last name. He says cancel culture is a precursor to mass murder. And that's been, I mean, look at, if they can erase somebody that was as popular and as well-liked and as hardworking and as dedicated and well-documented as I was, they can erase anybody. And we're watching it happen with Trump. We're watching what's happening with, you know, a former president. I mean, we are off the rails. I mean, we're way off the rails of the crazy train. So
why are they canceling you? What happened?
PG&E, yeah, a lot of blanks to fill in. So
PG&E is trying to cancel you.
Well, they're trying to cancel me from their books. Yeah, they basically, what happened was, in January of 2017, I began to experience physical symptoms of PTSD, which were like nightmares, tremors, intrusive thoughts, intrusive memories, things that before I had never experienced in my life. So at that point I started to enlist, you know, the very good benefits that I thought I had. Again, one of the, you know, elite performers in the state, as the power company, you think the power company would have good benefits, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm enlisting my benefits. I'm trying to activate, a provider search to treat my PTSD, and could not get anybody to take me seriously or even hear me for that matter, because everybody is so tuned into their script. So, and also at the same time, trying to deal with a skeleton crew, you know, I mean, there were just multiple failures, systemic failures that happened that kind of cascaded until basically, I was reaching the end. I had experienced abuse from my time at the academy. Again, there's their like whole
physical
system
abuse or mental abuse or
look, the best way I can put it is on the best day, it's like the best military training you can get, right? Like maybe not Navy SEAL level, but it's boot camp. Like they're expecting you to perform at a very high level. They have very, very high expectations. The best way I can illustrate that is for my job title, as a gas service rep, we had, generally speaking, we were audited once a year. And when we were reviewed, as we called it, or audited, the expectation or our cut score was 97%. If we didn't get a 97% or better on our review, we failed that review. If we were qualifying for anything that we do on the pipeline, because it goes across state lines, we have to qualify for those jobs. If we're pipe wrapping, if we're, you know, building risers, or I'm sorry, if we're, you know, changing service valves, anything that we do on the pipeline or on the, now it's actually the whole equipment up to the meter tee, you have to qualify for that job. And so for that task, any task that you do on the pipeline, you have to qualify for that task. The cut score for that qualification, which is written and performance, is 100%. If you don't get 100%, you fail that test.
Wow.
So that's the level that I'm used to performing at. And I was doing great aside from the abuse. Their whole disciplinary structure, on one hand, they say it's positive discipline, but on the other hand, there's like this tacit hidden hand that if you step out of line, they will do something like this to me. I mean, I had one of my friends say, yeah, I heard they do that to people. And I'm like, wow, okay. I never in a million years thought it could happen to me because I was one of the high performing people in the company. But what it was that I was too vocal. I was too vocal and I was pointing out inefficiencies and I was not backing down because there were certain things that were not acceptable. For instance, at the time that I really started to get vocal up here in Northern California, where I'm at now, we had a GSR or gas service rep who had a customer service rep riding along with him in Fresno. Somebody opened fired and killed that customer service rep.
Wow.
In the gas service truck. If it wasn't for the gas service rep's training, extensive emergency response training, he could have been killed as well.
Wow.
But as it was, only the customer service rep was killed. And this is the tragedy of the story. This young man had just gotten hired onto the company. And he had a job that he would normally never be sitting in the passenger seat of a gas service truck. He was only doing that because he was trying to understand, you know, one of the job titles that he services. So that, you know, that's just something we do inside the company, that inter training or whatever you call it. So that was something that laid heavy on my heart. And the reason why I brought it to the director's attention on a stand down call, because every time we have a fatality in the company, there is a stand down. The whole, you know, the whole department or whatever, they all get together and we discuss it on the phone. Well, because the reason why I spoke up was because we couldn't get our dispatcher to answer the phone. We were at night out here all alone up here, way, way behind the Redwood Curtain. And the dispatcher, the guy who was the only guy in the company who knew where I was, what kind of work I had, what my next job was, and actually had the GPS location of where I physically was, wasn't at his desk. He wouldn't answer the phone.
Shooting happened and he wasn't answering his phone?
Well, he was answering the phone he was not answering the phone because there were several times that we were calling and it wasn't just me complaining. I was just the one that had the most clout behind her name. you know, we would call and he wouldn't answer. Sometimes it would go to the answering machine.
This was a repetitive thing this gentleman did. He was constantly not answering calls for repetitively.
Yes, you guys.
Okay.
Yes.
But was he there? Did he answer that emergency call when your coworker got shot?
Well, this is in Fresno. So we're in a different area.
Okay.
So what happened? Yeah. Sorry about that. I know this is really, it's really hard to digest this story because it's there's a lot of technical pieces to it. Fresno happened in April of, I don't know, I think it was 2017. And I was up here in Eureka and it happened down in Fresno. But when we have a death in the company, there is always a stand down call. And usually they do it by department because that way you can get the whole, you know, you can get the whole picture of how that is relative to the department. So it's just getting everybody involved. And this is what's so great about, this is the great part, the part that we need to celebrate about PG&E's culture, safety culture, is that we talked about safety all of the time. I mean, we ate, drank, and I mean, you couldn't do what we do for a living dealing with these incredibly dangerous commodities that kill people, if you didn't do that. So that's just our culture. We talked about safety all the time. It's very second nature to us. When we had the stand downs, it was the whole department because it was a serious situation and we needed to examine or whatever. What are the lessons learned? What do we need to do? So this is a perfectly appropriate place for me to be bringing it up.
Okay.
Because we had had so many attempts at actually dealing with it in-house. So obviously it's preferable to deal with it in-house.
Right.
But you know, at a certain point when you're the only night man, you know, up in a very remote area and, you know, you're just trying to get the person to do their job to make it possible for you to do yours. I mean, the dispatcher is literally our one-stop shop for everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those of us who are first responders understand this. And imagine, you know, for those of you who are listening or watching that are first responders, imagine your dispatcher's not answering the phone.
I know. there's just no way I could fathom that. That just doesn't
right
come into my brain.
Exactly. So that's why I was speaking up. But the problem, here's the thing, in a corrupt or in a diseased corporate culture where, you know, it's just, there, the inefficiencies are not being addressed. It's not every culture has inefficiencies.
Sure.
But you got to address them. And when they're not being addressed because of, you know, whatever, I can't even put a finger on why it doesn't get addressed. But when you have somebody coming with a very specific request and they're specifically not listening, and then instead of addressing the simple solution, which is just to have the guy do his job, you go after the person who's making the request in the first place. That's basically what happened to me. I was speaking, and I think the reason why they came at me so hard was because I do have the experience that I have. I do have the reputation. They know that when I say something, there's weight behind it because I know what I'm talking about, not just from my own job's perspective, but when I was teaching at the academy, I was teaching across four lines of business. So when I came up to Humboldt County, I had a working knowledge of engineering, of, you know, of gas construction across its whole scope, you know, again, at a very high level, not at an expertise level. My expertise is in emergency response, but I had a high level understanding of it. So I was a really high value employee that came up here, and my supervisor, who, you know, took the bid and was happy that, you know, I wanted to work the nights. I wasn't interested in any kind of fanfare. I just wanted to hit my truck and get to work. He was thrilled, but bankruptcy hit and he retired, and the next thing you know, this is a little bit before bankruptcy, he retired, and the next thing you know, the hammer's being dropped, they've got henchmen coming up to Eureka, causing all kinds of trouble. I mean, we were humming, we were a skeleton crew, but we were getting it done. There were just seven of us in gas service, and we were handling the entire Humboldt, you know, County's natural gas service territory, which is basically northern Humboldt County. And we were getting it done. And, you know, this guy came up and just started wreaking havoc on the yard. And again, instead of addressing the guy who's wreaking havoc, They came after the person who was trying to speak for the group. I came up as a leader of the company. I came up with a very, very solid reputation. It was only appropriate for me to stand up in a leadership role and to speak for the group. But because I was doing that a little bit too close to bankruptcy time, and because I had the knowledge that I had, and because, frankly, because the management culture at PG&E has become so malignant, the next thing I know, I have a huge target over my head. And I was, again, remember, I was already grappling with symptoms of PTSD. So as soon as they found out that I had PTSD and that I was experiencing symptoms, I was actually trying to communicate that to them and let them know I needed just the reasonable accommodation for them to back off and let me do my job. Like, guy, I am an expert in my job. I used to teach this job. Can you please just back up and let me do my job? And it just got worse and worse and worse until finally I had an event that happened, you know, that isn't important. What was important was that it was finally, let's just say, as we say in the PTSD world, my cup just got full and it started to overflow. And I, as I put it, I was no longer fit for duty. Because again, I dealt with explosives for a living relative to the customer's home. So I was the person that came into your home when the carbon monoxide detector was going off and did the very complex procedure of figuring out, you know, whether or not your house was safe by the time I left. Mm-hmm. And that is a job that the person who is doing, wouldn't you want that person to be fit for duty, Amber? If somebody came to your house, your grandmother's house, you would want that person to be fit for duty. Well, when I took a knee, as it were, that was when cancel culture began. And it hasn't stopped for 4 years. So this, and this was all before COVID. You know, this was just, I had finally reached the limit of my disability, which I've had since I was 9 years old. And I have, it has never gotten in the way of me being an incredibly successful, you know, I'm very thriving single mom, businesswoman, you know, whatever. I mean, I have faced every challenge head on, and the people that have worked with me know that because I exhibited that and demonstrated that, and that's all part of the record. So, but what PG&E is trying to do is not give me the workers' comp benefits that I'm owed because it was hostile work environment. It was disability discrimination. It was denial of reasonable accommodation. It was inaccessibility to the benefits that I paid for, which then crosses over into fraud. Wow. So I paid for those benefits, and I have still 4 years later not been able to access them. It's 4 years into this, and I still have not been treated for the symptoms of PTSD that had now have exacerbated so badly that I can't even leave my property or even really get into too deep of relationships with people because they don't understand the level of injury that is involved and physical disability that's involved with PTSD. So yeah, I have the Social Security judge calling me a conspiracy theorist. I have a God of possible. He is the way maker, the miracle worker, the promise keeper. And I, you know, and here we are. Here we are on Amber May telling the story that I've been, you know, living through. And I do think it's relative to California. And I do think it's relative to the country because we do want safe energy delivery. We absolutely do. We want safe, reliable, and affordable energy. And it's not a song and dance that's going to get us there. It's the hardened.
So once you were trying to get help for yourself, that's when they were trying to take the opportunity to, what were they trying to fire you to?
My disability. They leveraged my disability and the fact that they had power over whether or not I was going to get my benefits because all of the parties, the third party companies that work for them to see me through the process. I mean, these are all women. These are all women that just wrote me off as crazy. One right after the other.
Why would they have assumed you were crazy? Like, did you do something?
Because I was complaining because I was requesting an investigation into the abuse that ended my career. because okay. when I
you
went to
really look go into the abuse part, is that something you're not comfortable sharing?
Well, just yeah, at a high level, we like I said, when we basically everything was great, just like natural gas, emergency response, everything is great all the way up until the point that it's not sometimes. And that's just exactly what happened. Everything was awesome all the way up until the point that it wasn't. And the point that it, you know, changed was, like I said, when our veteran supervisor retired up here in Eureka and we got a rookie supervisor in. He was 3 years into the company. He was full of piss and vinegar. He wasn't listening to anybody. He was a headhunter. He was disciplining us before he had even accepted the role. He was calling us. He was calling us and disciplining us up here in Eureka. We were running like a well-oiled machine. And he was calling us and disciplining us before he even accepted the role. So
what discipline could he give if you guys were doing all the right things?
You know, like expense stuff. He was like, oh, you're looking at the expense records. And he was horrible at hiding the fact that he was a headhunter. He was horrible at hiding
the fact. Everything was just a file, right, Power Girl? What's that? Everything was just a file, wasn't it?
That he was talking about? You mean the discipline part?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. We can give him that. Yeah, we'll give him that.
On your end.
Not on my part. No.
No, when he's saying your expense, this and that, couldn't you justify every expense that was on the expense?
Oh, I see what you're saying. You know, sure. I mean, he wasn't calling me about my expenses because I never used the P card. I never ever used their card, so they couldn't call me on expenses. But one of the guys he was calling expenses, was it justified or not? I'm not sure because it wasn't my expense and I don't remember the details. But I do remember thinking it was highly irregular for a supervisor to be taking on the role before he's even accepted it. Before his start date, I was like, this is way ahead of, and to further illustrate that, the whole first 6 weeks or so that he had taken on his role, he wasn't there. He was from Bakersfield. So he was moving up to Eureka. That's a big move. That's a whole stateside move, right? Mm-hmm. By the time he got up there, it was his second day of actually being in his role, and he was pulling me up on positive discipline. So, you know, this, and again, this was after 4 months of relentless abuse from the guy who preceded him. So we had a supervisor that retired, veteran supervisor who was running the ship. No problems. You know, I mean, we had problems, but he took care of them. He was a supervisor. That's his job. Next thing we know, in October, we've got this new, or not new, he's a gas service rep. He's just a yellow card who comes up and does the temporary fill between the veteran supervisor and the regular supervisor that's going to get hired. The guy in between is the guy that basically was the meat tenderizer. He came up and he just harassed us all, not just me, but especially me. he was just being a typical yellow card. Little bit of power goes to his head and he loses his mind. I mean, that was basically what was happening. I'm like, he was just getting on our case for things that were really, there was nothing. I'm like, there's nothing wrong here. Like, I don't understand why you're doing it. And we were all getting really triggered. I mean, it wasn't just me. It wasn't just me that was getting like, we were all kind of like ready to strangle the guy. So right about the time we're getting ready to strangle the guy, the other guy comes in, the new guy, the greenhorn. I mean, the other guy at least had 10 or, you know, 12 years with the company maybe. So at least he had some kind of culture under his belt. He wasn't a total greenhorn. The guy that came up in January of 2019 was a total greenhorn. I mean, three hours. It seemed like 3 hours with the company, 3 years with the company, which we say in our job title, that's just long enough to be dangerous. And he had never even been a gas service rep. So he came up and he, like I said, he was the guy that actually now had the power. So the in-between guy had no power, but he tenderized us. You know, he beat us up. He was sneaking up on us. He was pulling up on me all hours of the night. He pulled up on my lunch break after telling me he was going to follow me all night. And remember, I worked by myself. So I worked by myself at night up here in Humboldt County, which was totally my wheelhouse. I loved it. Not so much when you've got a supervisor who's stalking you and you're the only one on shift and it's dark. And I'm like, I'm on lunch. And I mean, thankfully I had a witness because I had my best friend in my ear because I had my headphones on coming out of the grocery store when he was stalking me on my lunch. And, you know, I'm like, what are you doing here? I'm clocked out. Go away. It's 8 o'clock at night. I'm taking my lunch. You know,
that would be very unsettling. I would feel very threatened if that was happening to me.
Exactly. So I made a complaint to the supervisor, who's now the new supervisor coming up, because the veteran supervisor who I had zero problem with and who actually offered me the job of supervisor when I came up there is long gone. He's long gone. And now we've got this new guy. So I complained to him about the stalking on my lunch. And that's what started the whispering behind my back. I mean, it was an S show. It was an absolute S show. And the whole reason why I went to the night shift was to get off of the radar and to just get out of everything. And it followed me, is all I can say. It followed me up here because I wouldn't stand down. I wouldn't stand down when they were going against what they claimed. I mean, you know, the best way I can explain it, I don't know if this helps, but one of my buddies said, Christina, you're never going to get the apology you're looking for. And I was like, I am not looking for an apology. I am looking for alignment. This is not right. It's illegal. You can't take someone's money for 16 years and then not provide the insurance benefits that they're paying for. You can't use someone's disability as a way. I mean, basically, for anybody who saw The Karate Kid in the 80s, right? Ralph Macchio. Yes. They basically swept the leg. They used my injury against me. And when they realized I had PTSD and that I was even telling them, I'm like, guys, I'm struggling with PTSD. I'm looking for help through EAP, which is the Employee Assistance Program. That's how I access my benefits. I'm telling them, I'm like, just back off. Let me do my job. Let me do my job. I know what I'm doing here. If you have a specific problem, but they wouldn't, he just kept sneaking up on us. He kept sneaking, he just showing up. And I'm just like, it was really insulting for somebody after 20 years of exemplary service to have somebody sneaking up and like insinuating that he's trying to catch you doing something wrong when...
Yeah. So let me see if I got this right as we wrap up today's show. So what happened was you were seeing things that were unsafe for the employees, and you were trying to bring it to the attention of the company because the whole undercurrent of the company is safety, because that's very important when you're working in electricity and natural gas and things like that.
Absolutely.
And so they wanted to shut you up. Because you kept bringing it up to their attention and they weren't ready to fix it. And you weren't being quiet about the safety issues you were seeing. You end up transferring out of one area and going up to another area. And everything was fine until, well, you had some trauma with the explosion and that really bothered you. You had a
Academy. The academy is where I left. So that's an important piece because most of the abuse happened at the academy. So when I went into the academy, I was tapped to go into the academy to be their first female senior technical instructor. And from what I understand, and this is the way things work in high corporate, you know, I think what they were doing were they were either trying to make me or break me. So they just, again, they put their boot on my neck for 4 years straight. They squeezed every ounce of talent out of me. They didn't give me any credit for anything they gave me credit, but they also, you know, were creating, let's put it this way. Anytime I complained about something, no matter how diplomatic I tried to be about it, they just tried to make it look like it was me as that I was the problem, that I was just a complainer instead of actually just addressing the very simple things. And look, I was the kind of person that if I was bringing a problem to the table, I was also bringing a solution. I mean, that's just who I am. I understand if you're going to complain about something, you should try to solve something. And I have a good mind for that. So I usually had some kind of solution and was always open to, you know, to feedback. So I think what it was is not just because I moved up, but because I left the academy and basically, you know, was like, I'm good. You guys, no offense, but not my style. Right. And the way my mentor put it was that he went into management after 5 years, which is about my same time. And he said he found out his ethics were just not flexible enough. And that's what I found. That's why I left the academy and went up to Humboldt. But once I went up to Humboldt and started to talk about the academy, specifically not naming names, but naming issues, right? The management at the academy was so malignant, and I wasn't the only one being abused. All the talent, I mean, anybody that had any kind of talent or upwardly mobile potential was just being treated like dirt. I wasn't the only one. And a lot of us left. And again, this is why it's so important to the industry, because is it good for a such a high safety critical industry to be running off anybody that shows any kind of determination, talent, you know, competency? No, that's not a good thing. And that's how we've ended up where we're at. I mean, and that's even in, like, to say what we said before, indicative of California politics. That's exactly this command and control, abuse, ideology-based world that we live in here in California, it's not working.
So what would you like to accomplish with these videos that we do and you're getting your story out? Are you just trying to bring attention, or what is your goal in all this?
That's a great question. My primary goal is to just highlight the importance of safety in these types of industries. And that could just even be just construction. We'll just do it at a high level. When you're dealing with construction, you know, the safety focus is so important. We have lost sight of that at PG&E. So I would like to refocus on that. That's my number one goal. My other thing is, you know, really, and that I would say they're not even one and two, they're right side by side, is I want my story to encourage anyone who is literally feeling their world slip out from under them, that and everything come crashing down around them. And this is happening everywhere right now to everyone, where your cup is overflowing and you don't know what to do. You don't have answers. You don't have even a road in front of you because it's so foggy or so dark. You know, my number one thing is to say to you that there is an answer, because for me, the answer was Jesus. For me, thanks to my upbringing, I knew that there was an answer in Jesus. And thankfully, I'd already given my heart to him, ironically, when all this craziness started to happen. So, you know, again, I just think, that's my number one message, is that, you know, we're all going through this craziness. I am a PTSD and disability advocate. I am here to tell you that I see your injuries even when no one else does. Mm-hmm. Invisible injuries matter.
Yes,
and they do. And we are all suffering from them.
Jesus is the answer to those injuries, because he's the one who ultimately can heal where no one else can. You know, Power Girl, your story is great. You have a beautiful heart. If people want to reach out to you because maybe they're going through something, what's a great way to contact you?
The best way to keep up with me right now, because I don't have a website, I'm still fighting for my freedom and trying to do all this at the same time. So the best way to keep up with me is I have a Telegram channel that is Power Girl Productions Presents. You could just search for that. And then and Power Girl is one word. And then also I have two Rumble channels that I'm really, really focusing on right now. The Power Girl Power Hour, which is all about solutions for this new normal. And then also the Keeper of the Flame, which is really, really easy to look up on Rumble. Both of them are. The Keeper of the Flame is the exposure industry. So that's where I'm really trying to parse out this 5,000-pound elephant of safe and reliable energy, you know, delivery. And also California cancel culture, and also what's going on with, you know, the new normal and how it's affecting our lives. So those are that's the two main channels, Keeper of the Flame and Power Girl Power Hour.
Well, thank you, Power Girl, for joining me today. I appreciate you so very much, and I've enjoyed getting to know you. Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate you so much. We'll see you on next time.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us today on The Amber May Show. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And if there's someone that came to mind, please share this episode with them. Please follow us on Telegram at The Amber May Show, True Social Amber May, Frank Social Amber May, or Clout Hub. I can't wait to see you next time on The Amber May Show.